How are y'all doing?
Hi, everybody.
Over 20 episodes in, and we still don't know how to introduce the show.
I think that's part of our charm.
I think we've just gone through so much conversation, heated conversation, that we're just like, hey.
We're on our
level. How you doing?
We're talking about communication this week.
If only other people that listen to our show lived around us, we could do a live studio audience, and they just sit there going, wow, they really do talk about a bunch of crap that has nothing to do with anybody else but themselves.
I was going
to
say, that was, what, an hour and a half of, like, us just talking about random shit before
this,
we actually
This is
down.
The other reason we don't usually record on the weekends.
Yes.
We have too much time. Episode of Fangs and Fonts. I'm Ocean.
I'm Roland.
I'm Boyce.
I'm Yanara.
And this is Fangs and Fonts.
So, for those that aren't aware, we're actually recording on the weekend rather than recording on Monday, which is, and it's also early in the morning
and
rather
I'm
than late at night.
I'm on my fourth coffee.
Fuck,
I'm on
really?
My third cup of tea.
I almost drank my whole coffee on my own.
I'm not double fisting now because I drank all my coffee and I'm halfway through the Coke.
So this episode, we're going to talk about communication.
Ironically enough.
We should probably communicate after this point.
Apparently we function far better at evening than we do in the day.
Well, all I could think of was our opening line on the Google document is probably not the best opening for the podcast.
I was going to open with the first point here. I'm like, huh. That's not a good idea.
Big ditto. Like, we can always, nope.
All right, so.
Communication.
The first subject matter that we kind of have here, it looks like how to act as a writer towards pretty much anyone else.
Well,
your readers, your editor, like general interaction between a writer and everyone else.
Unless you're going to be that writer that hides away and has a fake name and an address so that no one can track you, and you're never going to talk to anyone other than your one editor and your one publisher.
That's really not a good way to deal with like being a writer these days either.
That was great in like the 1800s. And you were a woman, and women weren't supposed to publish.
Back when the
stuff like that.
Back when the publisher.
Yeah. Nowadays, you're generally going to talk to other people.
Yeah. Back when the publishers typically like were the ones promoting your work, and you didn't have to have a public face. That's not the case anymore.
No, we have social media and
social media and Facebook and Twitter.
It's
and
almost like you have a social
Google and StumbleUpon and Dig and Reddit and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, the fact is that the author today is not the same as the author was back in the day. And now there's a lot having to do with publishers are looking for people who know how to run social media because it's free advertising for them, which means more profit for them.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of more expectations of marketing and putting your name out there is now you're responsible for it as well.
Yeah.
You're almost wholly responsible for it at this point.
But the one thing that comes across when you end up having to do that is interactions with other people, be it other writers, be it with your fans, be it with editors, and so on and so forth, which is why we put together this podcast.
And what do you do when you're not so good at communication?
Exactly.
Some people aren't so great at this. Some people are either too quiet. Some people are far too vocal.
And some people
get it just right.
And some people haven't had the social education growing up that others have.
So where should we start?
Writers talking to writers.
So, how are you guys doing today?
Yes, we're the...
How's your writing doing? Don't mind me.
I guess a decently good example of trying to make your works known, get your name out there, is this podcast that we do.
So
it's as much for notoriety as it is for actually letting writers know what to do and what not to do, or open a discussion.
So, let's say you go to a convention, with a writer convention. Be it furry or not furry, and you come across another person who is a writer. When you sit down, you end up talking to them. How do you go about doing that so that you don't come across as an egotistical douche?
Well, how do you both know your writers? I guess you're both assuming.
What context? Like, what situation?
I'm just
going to
destroy this analogy and start asking all a bunch of questions. Because I'll be like, how did we start talking? Are we at a diner? Do they look cute?
I see a problem with your initial scenario, because if I'm talking to another writer, odds are I'm not spewing about my own story to them. Odds are I'm either talking about something else entirely, or we're talking about the fundamentals of writing.
Let's say you've gone to the gathering place of most writers, if other podcasts are to believe, at a writing convention. You're at the bar, at the hotel. You've sat down, and there's other people around you who are wearing their badges, name tags, whatever. And clearly they're here for the con. And you just, for whatever reason, just started chatting about whatever. And then you're obviously curious about what they do and why they're there, just as much as you would hope that they're curious as to what you're saying and what you're writing. How do you end up engaging another writer without letting your ego take over?
Well, in most conversations with anybody, I find a great way to start a conversation and continue a conversation is be interested in the other person. So you're going to ask them questions about themselves, because who doesn't love,
talking about themselves?
You know, especially if someone else is interested.
And that's part of the thing, is if, say, we're sitting down at the bar and having a conversation, and I turn and I say, what do you write? And say you turn around and go, well, I write romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate romance. The thing is the first thing you can't say is...
I'm
going to
stop you right there. And be careful, because the next question you're possibly going to get back is, well, what have I read that you've done?
Yeah,
is one of the most popular ones.
Oh, nothing, because I write a lot of really weird shit.
But I think that question itself is a problematic question to ask of anyone. Because it does kind of make you come across as an a-hole, because it's just, you're A, assuming that it's something that you can get your hands on readily, and this may or may not be the case. You're also pretentiously assumes that this person is famous enough that you can pick up their stuff anywhere, and you should have read it.
I think it's just a bad assumption to assume that one of the 7 billion people on this planet has produced something you've read. It's really just not.
I guess it's a little bit easier in the furry fandom, because we have much smaller.
Yeah,
works.
Obviously it's a lot smaller demographic, but
like I could probably mention all the anthologies that I've seen that have taken submissions this year.
It's still kind of a bad assumption. I mean, how many books are there, and how many of them have we all read? Like, if it's almost safe to assume that if you've written something in Roar or Fang, or one of the more popular anthologies such as Heat, then somebody's probably read your work if you're published there. But
and that's the thing, is that there's tons of work. Like, when I end up talking to other writers about furry publications, just to use our genre particularly, it's like the Vixen Sorcerer, or Sorceress. No one's heard about it. It was a small individual press that I came across at RF, but it's a book that, unless you've picked it up, no one knows about. The same thing goes for a lot of the earlier fiction in the fandom. I mean, how often do you come across Whisper of Wings by Paul Kidd anymore?
Sounds nice.
Well, like, I don't know. I don't really think a bar is the appropriate place to really be talking about the publication, unless you're specifically meeting with somebody, like, for a project that you're both working on,
but
where you already know why you're both there. I think the more appropriate situation for promoting your own work and talking about, other people's writing would be things like a panel, where they're pretty much constructed for that purpose.
Well, I was thinking in this case, more of you're in a social situation where you've come across another writer. It can be a bar, it can be you've met them at a play, you've met them and you just found out that through general conversation that, hey, this other person is a writer too. And you want it, and let's face the facts. We as writers enjoy talking about writing. That's one reason we started this podcast.
Well, we did it anyway.
So if you're talking to someone else who's a writer, how do you present yourself as a writer to them without letting the writer ego take over? And how do you respond to them when they talk to you? Especially if, say, they end up taking that route where they end up going, me. Yeah.
That's, again, like, you can have those conversations outside of writing where, It's a little bit tiring because sometimes I want to strike up a conversation with someone, and so I will ask them questions, and then all they will never ask questions back. And so it just shows that they're not really interested in you. They're just happy in you asking them questions.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's up to you then if you want to continue.
So, in the conversation, can you and should you talk about your own personal works when you've approached another writer and you're having a conversation?
I think if they ask.
Yeah.
Because it's really, there's no really good way to bring up the... this is what I've written without actually being prompted for it.
Well, it's the same on the show where we want to give examples, and our best examples to ourselves are things we've used in our own books.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to be pretentious going, well, I did this in my story. Instead, we're like, well, if you end up reading the story, you'll see that in this, I did this in the story, and that this is my reasoning behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, I was in this story, I did this, I did that, I did this.
Unless you're specifically giving a list of, you know, someone's asked you what you do.
And we've discussed amongst ourselves, like, are we talking too much about our own stories? Because we'd be afraid if all we do is talk about our own stories.
Yeah.
That would get boring really fast. Well, it's like you have that issue with that one guy who...
Do you want to say his name?
Yeah.
I wasn't going to say his name.
It's... Well, I've talked about it enough in the podcast. One thing that brought up this topic, specifically writers talking to writers, and it's also kind of one of the reasons behind this actual whole podcast, is just presenting yourself as a writer to other people, like other writers. And I've come across Kevin J. Anderson, and the more I hear from him as a writer, the more, like, his writing's okay. I don't mind his writing, but the way he presents himself as a writer to other writers comes across as very egotistical. There's the one soundbite from Dead Robot Society where he is like, I am Kevin J. Anderson, author of more books than you will ever publish. This is a podcast for beginning writers. For you as a established, famous author to state something like that, though very true, also comes across as being a giant egotistical idiot. Another thing that I came across recently was that one of the author blurb at the end of one of his publications, he states that he is in print in more than 11 million books worldwide. This is usually fine when someone else says it. This is Roland. He has been in print in more than $1 million books. But for himself to say it, it comes across as there are better ways to word it where you don't come across as like this giant egotistical comment. Especially, you know.
Well, you don't mention how many books you've literally been printed in for the sake of producing a big number to stroke your ego with.
Exactly. And that's exactly my problem.
Line exactly. I've written more books than you'll ever write.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, thanks.
I've published more books than you'll ever write or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, good for
and
you.
It's like, okay, congratulations. Stroke your ego more.
You I was know, like,
how
I,
are you supposed to help me?
Yeah. I don't see the benefit to...
So I should just give up now?
Yeah. I don't see the benefit to, like, sort of imposing yourself on completely new writers. Of course, they haven't written anything yet. That's why they're listening to your podcast.
I think it's supposed to come off as a joke, but it doesn't.
No.
Yeah, well, that's another good thing to bring up, is some people like to think that they're, you know, making jokes or trying to be funny, and they're really not. And this can also be an issue when you are talking to other people and when you're trying to talk about things that you've written or the writing world in general, is that you can make jokes that are often interpreted the wrong way a lot.
It's easy, really.
Yeah, it's incredibly easy.
And
especially with a virtual medium where sarcasm is not always blatant.
If
the worst part is, like, I will use, like, you know, open bracket / sarcasm close bracket if I'm writing something. It looks ridiculous, but most people then get the point.
The irony in that is that the sarcastic bracket is in itself, like,
more
extremely sarcastic.
Yeah.
And so it just sort of amplifies the whole meaning of the entire message.
Oh, there's been enough times on Twitter where, like, you've said something or someone else said something, and me being my stupid sarcastic jerk will tweet something that to me is just like, derp, derp, derp. And then someone, of course, will come along and be like, no, it's like this. And you're like, Yeah, I understand that, and I understand that you can't see the sarcasm coming through the text, and just, and you just like, I just give up, and I'll walk away.
And the thing to realize is that due to the social media that does take place, we as writers, because we have that social aspect that does tie into our work, things that are, the way you present yourself to other people reflects on you as a writer and your craft, and will and can affect your book sales.
Which is, again, why I think that I'm, well, I've already done this for later, but just making a separate Twitter for more of a professional, like, hey, look, books and, you know, anthologies that are doing this, and maybe writing advice, so that I can still be my sarcastic jerkwad over here and realize that I'm not two different people, but I can be professional, and I can still be myself.
Which is why I have my two accounts. I have my one for my furry writer, and then I have my one for my real writer.
I still disagree that your real writer is that it's protected.
I know, and it's one of those...
I find that silly.
And I agree, and...
Because you're defeating the whole purpose of it.
And that's very true.
My real Twitter account is public, because that's kind of the point. That's the part that I want people to
the
find.
The thing I find more funny is that I have more people hitting my furry writer account than I do my actual writer account.
Well, why is that odd?
I can't figure out why that is.
I imagine you have bigger...
Your presence is much greater in the furry fandom, so why is...
But the thing
is why that's unusual.
But it's more horror writers are coming to my Voice Spider account than going to my Tarl account.
Could it be because of the protection?
No, because they're both protected.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Hmm.
Weird.
Maybe the maybe voice is much more attractive than your other account.
I could look at that bearded man.
Actually,
or that
sexy
spider.
I can imagine, given, like, if I'm a horror writer looking for more horror writing stuff, and I see like this giant spider fulf
on the
icon versus like the guy in his leather jacket leaning back on a concrete slab, I'd probably follow the horrific spider creature.
Very, very good point.
Way more fun.
So, to continue on. So we've already said, when you're talking to another writer, you know, ask lots of questions, engage the other person. You can ask about what works they have. Just don't make it sound like you should know about their works. You know, just be interested in what they write. Even if it's not a genre that you personally want to read. Not everyone wants to read horror, but people are still interested in see what I've been published in.
It's nice to know that, this is a published author.
Think of the questions you hate people asking you, and then don't ask them of the other writer.
Type. Another thing I want to bring up is... So you possibly, and I think I've heard a few people do, it happens sometimes, is that you are now a published author. You have some works out there. But say you wrote it a long time ago and you're not really happy with it compared to how you are now. Do not tear down that work.
Yeah.
If you want, go for example, well, I did this and now I've changed that. But don't ever say, well, I can't believe I let this be published. Because... Now, everybody else that could have been published in that spot, be it an anthology or a novel, because, you know, the publishers aren't going to publish every novel they're sent to. Yeah. Everyone else who's tried and been given a rejection letter will just feel incredibly horrible because, your crap is still better than something I wrote. Yeah. Thanks
a lot. It's entirely silly to completely disregard the works that got you to the point where you are today. Excuse me. So it doesn't really help to tear down any of your works to anyone.
You clearly did something right.
It really makes you seem pessimistic and kind of bitter. One of the points that I kind of wanted to come back upon, because we were talking about social media, the blog posts, which is another, you know, very common, very popular way of communicating with other writers, editors, readers, etc. In that... really should there are a lot of good blog posts, and it's a good way to actually communicate with writers about what your current opinions are on certain topics. The part that I kind of want to warn people about is that people don't seem to understand what satire is anymore, as well as people that write satire don't seem to know what satire is anymore. Just take a look at Cracked for any number of examples. I don't like the satire that people write anymore because it's really just bitter, like not even sarcastic, like it's mean and really doesn't reflect well on whoever's writing it. But yeah, that was my point.
At what point do you think you're able to go, I have enough knowledge to tell others, I should create a blog and start dishing out writing advice?
See, I don't think I'm ever at a point where I can tell somebody else what to do with their writing.
I would hope you're not telling someone directly, do this with your writing.
But some people do. Like, yeah. It's what a lot of blog posts consist of, but I don't ever feel the need to impose what I do as a writer on somebody else. I open the discussion, make my suggestions. I may argue strongly about some opinions, but at no point does my opinion ever trump somebody else's.
I just know some of the other authors in the fandom have like put out, like Kyle has his that he puts out, Candrell's put his out, Ray Chan's been putting some out on Erotica and FA.
See, and I feel like I should be doing the same, even though
you are. It's called the podcast.
as a blog post, though, like I feel like there should be some sort of bigger online, more individual online presence.
I have a blog.
And yeah, you have your live journal.
Yeah. Well, I have my live journal and I have my Goodreads blog. Mm-hmm. And I write more for my Goodreads blog. And sometimes it's observations, much like, say, the urban fantasy one that I just did. And sometimes it's just writing advice that I've come across. But the way to present writing advice is that here are my observations. Here are some of the things that I've learned. You're not telling people how to do it. You're saying, This is my own experience. Take with it what you will. You can or can't. You don't have to. You should never.
These are things that have worked for me.
You know,
suggest trying them, but it doesn't mean that it's the end all.
Be it on a blog, be it in person. Oh God, never in person. Huh. Don't ever force your opinion on another writer. That is the easiest way for them to remember you as a bad guy and for them to stop listening to you right away.
That and word travels quickly.
Yeah, bad mouth you to everyone else. The next thing you know, you're...
You will not be remembered fondly if you impose yourself on another writer. It is so easy for people to be remembered poorly, and that's one of the quickest and most effective ways to piss somebody off.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll forget that you gave them, such and such time, attention, money, whatever else, but you're an ass once, and that'll be there first and foremost.
And and the thing is it was on one of the things that I had posted on my Facebook wall for my writing account, is we as writers, it's a very solitary craft. We feel very strongly about our own personal works. We feel very strongly about our own craft. We do most of it alone. Even when we're in a group at a writing meet, we're still writing alone, which is why we all have our headphones in. So when it comes to someone else coming up and telling you how to do something that you already know how, let me tell a story, actually. I was recently visiting my brother, who is a non-writer, and in the conversation I had mentioned something that I heard on Writing Excuses, and revolving around Game of Thrones and revolving around Wheel of Time. He has read both series multiple times. So I asked him about it, to which point he turned around and lectured me on how to write a novel. Now, I understand his personality, I understand how things go, but it's really hard for me as a writer to shake the fact that someone who doesn't write was lecturing me on how to write a novel, something that I already have done 3 times, just not published. If he had been a writer, that would have stuck in my craw for a very long time, especially because it wasn't an open dialogue, which is what it should have been. It was one person telling another person what to do.
Well, this kind of goes back to the old adage of those who can't do, teach. And so people who don't or can't do something doesn't stop them from having a strong opinion on it. And somebody that tells you, you know, with absolute certainty that this is the way to do something is like pretending there's only one way, you know, to build a chair.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different ways to go about doing something that pretending that your solution is the one and only is just stupid.
Well, it also goes on to communicating with an editor. You should be having a dialogue with an editor. It shouldn't just be everything is...
That's my segue.
Oh.
Very nice segue.
Okay.
Thank you for completely destroying it.
That was just... I thought you were on a motorbike.
Very nice motorbike Thank into
you.
The next
Yeah,
topic.
I thought you were like steering into a wall or something.
Anyways.
Which brings us to our next point.
But yeah, when communicating with editors, you really should have a dialogue going. Because the editor is not there to tell you what is wrong with your story.
Mm-hmm.
The editor is there to help.
It kind of is.
Well,
no,
isn't
not
the point
directly.
Of having an editor?
They're there to see what you've done with your story and figure out what can be changed to make it better, to bring out the concepts a bit better.
Okay.
Not to tell you, you did this wrong, you did that wrong, don't do this.
So, to go into the topic, when we're talking about editors, we're not talking about your beta readers. We're talking about you've got your work accepted, you are now working with an editor for an anthology, or for your to publish your novel, and you're now having that dialogue between you as a writer and them as an editor of the anthology slash novel. Sorry, I had to get that in.
Nope, that makes sense.
Well, it's a good disclaimer to make.
So, when it comes to communication between editors and writers, maintaining a constant and consistent dialogue is important. Communication errors abound. You know, you need to make sure that everybody is on the same page. But,
they can't see
like,
me shaking my head.
You know, if you don't understand a point or if you disagree with something that's, you know, whether it be writing or during part of the process, it's important to keep that dialogue open for both the editor and the writer included.
Now, there was something that you had come across that Kyle had said about editors and what editors are there for.
Well, I think that's kind of what I just explained before. The editor is not there to tell you how to write your story. The editor
is not
there.
That is correct.
Yeah, as an editor, you're not there telling the author what they've done wrong, how to write their story, and how they would
have
written it.
As
an
editor,
it's
not your job to tell somebody how their story should be written.
And
and it's not up there for you to rewrite their story.
No, that's...
And having been an editor for Abandoned Places, there were points where I will admit at this point that I made that mistake. And there are other points where I did it correctly and I did it incorrectly in regards to... I felt this, you know, such and such story would be better if this. And there were ones, such like the Kitsune story, where I handled it really well. And then there were other stories where I handled it badly and deservingly got my comeuppance for doing that. And it's just one of those things where it's like, yes, as an editor, you've already accepted their story. So in accepting their story...
You've told them it's good.
You've told them it's good. You've told them that this story is good enough to be in this anthology. You're there to edit all the copy editing, all the things, and maybe minor plot points.
No, occasionally it'll be like, your story works very well here. With the other stories in the anthology, though, it would be nice if we could just tweak this to give it this different tone, because
mm-hmm.
it would reflect that in the anthology.
And that goes back to the same thing if you were talking to another writer, where you have to be polite. You have to, you know, be polite, be suggesting. Don't tell. That said, the editor does have more of a say in what goes on than the writer does in regards to the story. And it's kind of one of those situations where there has to be a balance, because as soon as it gets unbalanced, one of the parties is going to end up feeling slighted.
Just because the editor has final say doesn't give them the right really to impose their opinion on somebody else's story. And the job of an editor is also the same for just about anyone else that reads your story for the purpose of feedback is that it's not your job to tell this person how it should be written, but to tell them, here's a plot hole, this character seems inconsistent, etc.
We don't want to go too in-depth into this because we actually want to do a whole episode on the writer-editor relationships, but it is important to know that, you know, editors do have the final say on the story for something like an anthology or that.
Even if it means just it's not included.
And an editor does have the right to refuse your story if there continues to be an issue between the writer and the editor. That said, the author also has the right to back out of an anthology if they feel they are not working with the editor or there is a viewpoint of creative differences. Your story, until you sign that contract, is still your story. And most of the publishers that I've worked with in the small presses will not get you to sign the contract until you've gone through that editing point. Only once have I ever done the opposite, whereas before we started edits and there was a clause in that contract that said if the editor and the writer cannot reach an agreement on the edits, the editor has the full rights to basically remove you from the anthology. And that was just for, obviously they've been burned about this in the past with other writers. But basically in the end, with the dialogue between writers and editors, is keep an open dialogue, be able to back up your decisions for the edits that you may agree or disagree or want to do for it, and basically just keep talking. As soon as one of you shuts down, you achieve nothing.
Keep an open dialogue and be transparent, please.
Well, we've got so much we could say on that topic.
Yeah.
So what happens if you're at a convention or elsewhere and someone comes up and goes, hey, I read your work in blah,
and I liked it. I'm hoping they're going to say, not yeah. just yeah. like, I read your work.
Why are you delinting me?
Smile and say thank you.
Give them a hug and dry hump them a little.
If they try to initiate a conversation, just keep smiling and walk away slowly.
Would you like to read my thick book?
Well, if you think about it,
someone else for you to go
so if someone comes up to you at a convention or wherever and they're like, hey, I have actually read your work, they're either going to have something positive to say, something negative to say,
or they're
going to
ask you about it.
Or a bajillion questions to ask you.
Yeah, bajillion questions. How could I get published?
So
I have this story about this, and he's going to do that, and he's going
Yeah, the, hey, there's this book I want to publish. It's about a lone wolf that gets abandoned from a...
Where do you get your inspiration?
Oh, God. I hate that question so much.
No. But...
I get the inspiration from wanting to write.
I steal it from
I go, this would be a cool idea, and I write it. But,
I steal
yeah.
it from your dreams while you're sleeping.
So, if you actually have readers that like your work, congratulations.
Yay!
You have been validated.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, like...
The editor was correct in choosing you.
Just interact with people as you would normally interact with them. If somebody says, your work is great, say thank you. If somebody says, your work sucked, say thank you for your opinion.
Thank you for reading.
Yeah, thanks for reading my work. I would love a long, in-depth review on why you thought it was bad.
Just not right now.
But typically, if somebody's going to badmouth your work or, you know, anything of the like... And it doesn't
sit well with
you.
They're probably not
going
to do it to your face.
Well, they're probably not. But if they are, or even if they don't, if mm-hmm. they leave a bad review on Amazon or something silly, don't acknowledge them. Don't
get into a pissing contest or an argument with... If someone sits and gives you a bad review, they gave you... First of all, be... happy that they gave you took the time to write out an actual review of your story.
Your writing still affected them to such lengths that they went and reviewed your book.
Hopefully they bought it too, which is another point. Sorry. Yeah. I know the likelihood of that is minimal.
That always
but...
kind of annoys me when like you'll write someone a bad review and they're like, well, at least I got the money from the sale. You're like, that's...
Usually one of two things when somebody like goes and writes a review on your book. They're either like a reviewer or your book has affected them so much it positively or negatively that they have gone through the lengths to write a review for your book, even if it's just like this book sucked, which I still think is a good thing.
Yeah. So If I mean, for me, if they want to talk to you about how good your book is, that's great. Hopefully you have the time for it.
Yeah, if you have the time and you're not actually doing anything, engage them in conversation if you want.
Now, that said, there's always the situation that comes up that maybe they saw something in your writing that you did not intend.
Oh, that's always a good one.
Maybe there is... It's one of those things that I always think about for, say, Tolkien. Especially having done like The Hobbit and all that in school, both high school as well as in university, where it's, let's dissect The Hobbit and pull out this means this and this means this and the orcs are actually Nazis and this is all this stuff from when he was in, you know, a communications officer. And you kind of are left wondering, did Tolkien really mean the associations that he meant, or did he just write a entertaining story for children? And so what if someone comes up to you and does that situation where, oh yeah, I really liked how you did...
the pirates were symbolically Nazis coming over and taking the slaves away.
You could speak to someone passed on like this and like you ask them, you know, what was the depth behind the story? And, you know, they pull... So imagine if they, you know, they pull a Lewis Carroll on you and be like, I was just fucking high. How are you getting all of this out of that? Because Lewis, he was just gone when he wrote his stuff.
Well, the funny thing about that particular statement is that if you're high writing something, odds are you are trying to put some sort of psychedelic message into your story.
No, I tried to write stuff while I was high in my younger days, and I read it when I was sober and went, wow, I'm never doing that again. I'm an
It's not
idiot.
Necessarily for everyone.
Well, I'm talking about at the time of the inebriation.
His time and what was available in the market, true.
There are certain authors out there that have been like, I get high when I write because that's how it works.
Well,
like,
Alex Gray, when he does his artwork, he's stated right out that most of his artwork comes from, was it LSD or acid? But
one of the two.
Really. Yeah, and he's outright
We do not.
We don't condone
the use of illegal substances. Should they become legal, then we'll...
Do whatever you do, but don't you know.
But
I can't write anything. I'm gonna try.
Like, when it comes to people trying to interpret your writing, and like when they come up to you and say, "I really like how you did this," unless they're like blatantly wrong, just leave it. Say thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed that.
I think there was an example on Reddit Excuses where one person's like, oh, I really liked how your one character survived their depression. It really brought me out of this and the way that they handled this. And it really helped me save my life or something. And the author is just like,
thank you.
There was nothing in there about any of that. But all I could say was, oh, I'm glad you found that. I'm glad it helped you.
Yeah.
Congrats, you know.
Thank you for seeing everything in there that I needed you to see. Because you're awesome.
Well, this really just reminds me of junior high school. Take this book, now dissect it.
Yeah.
You know, it's entirely subjective, and I never did like that concept.
My English prof, he was great at that. He'd ask you, like, what do you think about this? And you'd be like, well, I think it's this. And he's like, that's very good. I never thought about it that way. Now let me tell you why I'm wrong, or why you're wrong and why I'm right.
Oh, God.
He did it in a bit of a sarcastic way, too, but it was great how he's like, let me tell you what's correct here.
I was never a big fan of, like, write an essay on, like, definitively on why this is this. I'm like, no, that, are you the author? Like, has this ever crossed your mind that this could not be what the author was writing about?
But it's still perfectly fine if somebody else draws a different conclusion.
Yes.
If they come to you about it, then handle it appropriately.
Of course.
Like, if it's something that, you know, they're like, it saved my life, just kind of like, I'm glad that you were able to get that from it.
You know, and that's a pretty extreme example. But even if they're just like, I like how this did this, it helped me through this, you know, inane life experience.
It's so nice.
I had written my one samurai story, and then there's a white lotus bloom in it. And I would give it to one of my friends to read, and they're just like, did you know? I really like what you did with the lotus bloom. I'm like, why? Well, because white symbolizes, like... something specific, I forget exactly, and it fit the story so well, and I'm like, wow, that is an amazing coincidence, because like, I just picked white because I needed a color.
Actually, your response can also be, wow, glad I thought of it.
glad I thought of that.
It was just a beta reader at the time, so I'm just like, that just made my story even better.
That made my day.
And I mean, like, it's you know, if something like that happens where your story becomes all the better because of something that that person has drawn from it,
mm-hmm.
great. I'm like, there's no reason, unless it is something you disagree with, something either that you morally disagree with or otherwise just didn't intend for the story to be, just roll with it. There's no reason you can't just say, yes, glad I thought of it, and move on.
I think just about think every piece of media and work out there is up for anyone's personal interpretation. The author or the creator will always have their view, but that doesn't mean that anyone who intakes that media can create their own view from it.
Well, and the thing is we as writers, being in the state of mind that when we write, who knows what we're actually pulling into our story? I mean, there's stuff that we could be pulling in from deep in our past that we aren't even conscious that we're pulling in. And you might get that one fan who sits there and goes, oh, I really like how you did this. And I saw the connection between this and this. And you're going, in the back of your head going, oh, shit, I actually was doing that. Holy crap. Well, you know,
I've never had that. That'd be kind of cool to experience.
The other thing about it, too, is that, like, when you write, and we as writers love the discussion that comes with writing, that comes with interpreting other people's works, that comes with reading. And so if somebody comes up to you and says, I really like how you did this, and you go, no, I didn't mean it that way, you've closed the discussion.
Kind of insults like,
you shoot down this person who came up to you with such excitement and enthusiasm just to say no.
Yeah, if you really disagree, at the most go, I hadn't actually thought of it that way.
That's
quite intriguing.
You know, you can also present your opposition in like some form of question or discussion topic. You're like, you know, I really like how you did this as a metaphor for the oppression of the Jews in World War II. And you're like, well, actually, I didn't quite mean it that way. How I meant it was, and then present, you know, the discussion topic to open dialogue with your readers.
Yeah,
it would be kind of a jerk move to say that's not what I meant and just leave it at that.
Yeah, like, don't just say no.
Don't
just say that you're wrong. It completely closes the discussion and kind of makes you seem like an asshole.
Yeah.
If anyone has ever done improv, there's the rule of yes. Is that anytime that someone creates something or offers something or gives a question to it, because it's improv, anything could happen, you never say no to it. Because you've instantly slammed the door shut. You've basically ended the scene because, look at this giant fish we have. And you're like, there's no giant fish there. Well, you just broke the scene. You just broke the whole magic. You just slammed everything to a slam shut.
Actually, it kind of reminds me of what Tarl was talking about with the protagonist in like a zombie thing.
Yeah.
Where he has the chance to survive by ricocheting... By shooting at zombies and like maybe having him ricochet back on himself, or just saying no, and like they choose to die for some ungodly reason. Like it doesn't make sense just to slam the door and erase any potential progress between you and somebody else.
Exactly. And I mean, and that's, it's all, as I mean, you're starting to see a theme here. It's all about open communication, and it's always about, you know, you don't want to slam that door in someone else's face because, again...
You never know what you're going to slap.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, for another example is magic. Not everybody plays magic, but F&M is supposed to be an environment to encourage people. The levels, for like, now that I'm a judge, they teach you that, you know, the rules you give out at an F&M is much different than a competitive level because there's two rules. There's the shake the finger at you going, don't do that again. Or the, you're out of here because you actually did something horrible and bad.
Yeah.
And that's because we don't want to punish you for making a bad mistake. This is a great place to learn. We want more people to get involved. We want the community to grow. And if you have more fun here, you're going to bring more friends or you'll want to come again. And then...
can feel more open about bringing up things, and so you're not getting shot down. You're not getting that negative reinforcement.
Exactly. When I play new players, I'll encourage them like, oh, by the way, you know, you could do this or... just let's clarify things because I want them to have fun. I want everyone to play because the more people that I have to play, the more people I can enjoy my hobby. It's the same with the writing community. You know, we want to encourage people to talk amongst ourselves, you know, share ideas, talk about things, because who knows, that little writer that you may have helped encourage might grow up and be a great novel, or they'll do an anthology that you can be published in, or...
And then they'll owe you one.
Well, like, look at it this way. You know, I'm about to see my first story published in pulp. And if it wasn't for you three, I honestly would not see that. If it wasn't for you three to help encourage me, like, hey, you should write. Hey, you know, you can submit to anthologies. Like, your writing's quite good. You shouldn't be afraid of it.
Aww.
I'm dead serious. If it wasn't for you three, I would not be on this podcast. I would not be, you know, looking at more stories to publish.
Can we insert the aww track?
Aww.
You find me the soundbite, I'll put it in.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's totally true. Is that as much as writing is about solidarity when you're writing, it is just as much about the community that you involve yourself with.
I think it's even about solidarity, because when I'm writing, I'll be like, I'm stuck on this idea. And I'm like, this is the situation. I can go to my friends. They'll be like, have you tried this? And I'm like, brilliant, done.
That's one of the great things about, like, about writing meets, but also about messengers and social media. You have an endless, you know, wealth of resources that you can just go to someone and be like, hey, I'm having trouble with this. And
at the same time, you know, we're like, Carl lately has been like, hey, you guys check out this anthology. You'd be great to write for it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sharing ideas. It's so much better to be open to everybody, including your readers, including other writers, including other editors, and building up a reputation and a network, because that's going to be so much more helpful as you continue your journey versus just closing in.
Communicating with and talking to, like, other writers in a community is one of the best ways to actually improve.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see people, like, you know, people that you look up to that are probably maybe better writers than you. You get to see other people's writing, and, like, I'm getting to a point now where I see people that are at a point where I used to be, like, last year. And it's kind of, it's neat to see, because you're like, I get to help you now.
Yeah. It's great, because there's some people that I've beta read their work, and they've come back to me a year later, and I'm looking, I'm like, you've improved so much.
Yeah.
And, like, even for you, I think it was last year when Yanis was like, hey, could I get you to edit my story? You're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Yanis wants me to do that?
Exactly.
You know,
because it's just like, oh, it's one of those authors that you always read about. They do all these anthologies. Holy crap, they want my opinion to do it. And then it's even more of a good feeling when you do it and you realize how much you've improved, because then all the edits you've suggested are actually valid edits.
If you keep up the discussion, you will be amazed at the kind of people that come in to join it with you. You know, whether it be your role model or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that they're also remarkably willing to talk to you about these things, provided that you have a presence.
Yeah. But, as we said before, one bad thing, and you can shut all those doors.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, it really is remarkable how the human psyche works, that you can work up such a positive reputation with somebody, and then you do something really stupid, and then that's all that's in their head anymore. And it's the same goes for businesses and...
Well, you don't even have to really do anything bad, but if you keep closing those doors on people by saying no or by not responding at all, it really creates a negative image of you, and people just aren't going to want to talk to you.
Well, and that's the thing is, and I mean, we're not going to go into details, but we've all at this table seen it where someone has closed that door or done something that's negatively impacted their writing career. Whether or not they actually are aware that they've done it. But we've watched them do it. We've discussed it amongst ourselves, because it's one of those pitfalls. And if you sit and you watch other writers enough, you can end up seeing those events happening. And it kind of helps you to stay away from them.
Oh, I was just going to say that you can actually see that, you know, in your social life, even in your writing life, is if someone keeps inviting you out somewhere and you say no, eventually they're going to stop inviting you
yeah,
out.
Yeah, looking at you guys.
They're eventually going to give up and stop inviting you out, and then...
How we write every Tuesday at Wendy's.
See, that's what made me happy, is that we're now back to that.
Well, yay me.
Yeah, well...
I mean, I don't
you get to hang out
write,
with us vicariously, kind
I throw
of.
Ice cubes at your fucking table.
Yeah, but lately, every Sunday, is like, are you guys doing something Sunday? We might be available. And we're like...
Well, I've changed my availability, so I'm not doing weekends anymore. The 7 days a week for the last 6 months is...
I am perfectly fine with having two write meets a week. I will always have something to do.
But yeah, it's saying no will close off more than your business life. It'll shut down your social life. It'll just not make anything available for you.
I should state that, like, you know, if people are looking for beta readers, don't feel you have to be that beta reader every single time. I know for myself, with voice, usually he's looking for beta readers. He comes to me and I'm just like, okay, when do you need it by? How much edits? And I'm just like, my schedule is this at the moment. If it fits into that schedule, we do it.
We'll talk.
Well, it's like my beta read for the story that I'm trying to beta read now. I announced maybe 6 times on Twitter that I need beta readers. And everyone who responds are non-writers. And it's just like, I need, which is fine. But I need...
You need edits. Writers.
And then finally I did it today, just before we did this podcast, and suddenly I had a number of authors come forward and go, yeah, actually I can do this.
Well, I've actually gone to Twitter twice in the last month. I need beta readers. Like, now. You need to read the story tomorrow. And then I've actually had people be like, yes, I will do this. And they've been writers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know some of them were like, that's fine. I know I'll get you back next time.
Yeah. I totally owe them one.
I've had, like, Ray-chan, who's like, you've beta read so much of my work. When do you want me to beta read something of yours? And I'm just like...
I think that's what you keep saying to me.
Well, yeah. And it's just like, you know what? Like, I don't mind building up that backlog, because eventually someone's going to call it and be like, hey, can you do this? And in my mind, I'll be like, hey, yeah, you know, I owe this person like a frick ton.
I've given up on counting. I'm just like, whatever. If people are free, they're free.
But you don't have the numbers, but you have the sense of. Like, you don't have to say specifically, okay, I owe this person over here 9 stories. But, this person over here owes me 3 stories. Yeah. But at least if you keep in mind that you have a sense of owning somebody.
But I think I've come to a point where at the same time, I've got lots of people now. We've developed a nice network over the last year, and new readers and old readers alike, that it's like, well, you're busy, they're not. Yeah. At the same time, you know, I'm not going to go, look, I've done the last 5 for you. Well, I'm busy all this month. Look, you owe me one.
Yeah, that's...
Because I'm not going to do that.
There's no specific intent of neglect when it comes to this. Like, if somebody's busy, they're busy.
Yeah, life kind of
none of us
happens.
Are doing this... Well, none of us are really editing professionally. It's a very tit-for-tat, like...
Yeah.
You get me... You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Mm-hmm. Like, trading system of beta readers.
Yeah.
Now... Moving on.
Yes.
That was a nice tag.
If you're an editor and you are dealing with a small press, large press, any kind of press, except your own.
Okay, enough.
Yeah. If you're an editor and you are dealing with a publisher, you've presented a anthology to a company, and you are now opening your dialogue with them in regards to getting this anthology put together. And the communication involved with. What do you do if you have questions about an anthology and no one gets back to you?
Keep sending emails.
Okay. So you there's an anthology you want to write for, and you want to ask a question, right? And so you go to the submission page. It says email the editor. You email the editor. You don't hear back after a week. Email them again?
I don't know about a week.
I think a week is quite a lot for me.
Well, it depends on what the context is. I mean, if you're...
How quickly do you need
to... If you're waiting back... Like, if it's been, you know, 6 months, you're waiting for your acceptance letter or rejection letter, and you send an email, and they don't respond within a week, send it again.
Or if they say something like, well, I'll have your edits out to you by the end of the week, and you don't hear from them the week, then I by all means be like, okay, the week is up.
Or it also depends on the time frame.
Like, what if there's an anthology due, and I want to know if I can write this story, but the time that ticks away waiting for a response to know if this story is even valid.
If I have a month to write this story, and I'm going, what is this, and it takes you a week to get back to me, that is a long time. I now have, I've gone from having 30 days to just over 20. And so that is a huge chunk of time. if you have 2 weeks to do something like edits, and it takes your editor or what whoever 3 days to get back to you, that's a large chunk of time.
It is, especially when you look at how much work you could be doing in that time frame.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's other cases for, say, in regards to, like, me contacting my situation with two of the presses that I'm dealing with in regards to their taking over of anthologies, where I sent an email out to one editor, to the editor, and saying, it's been 6 months since you sent out this email saying you have a new editor for this anthology. You're going to be seeing your edits back here soon. And going, okay, it's been 6 months. We haven't seen anything. And having them go, it's only been a couple weeks.
Oh, that was
And
silly.
It's like, well, no, if you look at the dates on these emails, it's been 6 months. And then them going, oh, you're right, I'll talk to them. They're saying they're going to work on it after their next project. And then the next thing you see is 3 releases for calls for submissions for the next series of projects from that company.
It's kind of pissing off.
And it's just like, it's been another 2 months after that email.
Are you going to contact them again?
I'm going to have to, because it's been... But that's
and you haven't got a single response, or just...
Well, the response was, it's like, I don't believe it's been 6 months.
See, that's the nice thing. At least you're getting responses.
Yeah, and that's
true. But it's not even a positive response. I don't think it's been 6 months. You're lying.
No, but it's not like that. It's just
they could also
not...
be entirely
you've got
ignorant of the fact that it's been so long.
Well, but that's not a positive thing.
But the thing is, though...
It's not a good thing, but it's not a malicious thing.
Yes. They are a small press. If there's one thing that I know from my experiences with dealing with small presses and looking into running a small press, it's busy all the time, and your work is going into all these different projects, and it's very easy to lose track of time. I've lost track of time on anthologies. Abandoned Places has taken me, like, I think 2 years now, and there's points where I was like, okay, well, I'll wait a week to get this done, and 3 weeks has passed, and I was too busy doing something else.
The thing that I've learned as an editor of an anthology is just how quickly, like, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 months can pass without you even knowing.
Yeah, that's true.
It's you get so swept up in what you're doing in a normal life. Like, this isn't my full-time job. This isn't something that's... This is something that's costing me money. And so I have so many other things to think about that 3 weeks down the line, I'm like, oh, yeah, I should get to that story that I meant to do 3 weeks ago.
What do you mean it wasn't, like, 3 weeks?
Well, it's been 3 weeks and I meant to get it done like 19 days ago. Mm-hmm. That's how quickly time passes and you just don't think about it.
Mm. I think this is a perfect time to talk about the waiting game.
Ugh.
So most people who've been in the business know that you will be waiting for everything.
Understand when it's appropriate to wait.
Hurry up and wait.
You're going to write that story, you're going to submit it, and then you're going to wait. I still think every editor should say this, is that when they receive your submission, they should email you back immediately going, thank you, I have received your submission.
Yes. That,
or even if it's an auto reply, if you can set that up on most message systems.
I think that there needs to be a point at which the editor says, yes, thank you, I've received your story, it will be set up for review within the next 3 months, a word back with you. It's very disconcerting to be
the silence.
An author sending in, and Tarl's experienced this more than any of us.
Yeah.
They don't receive your story.
I'm still waiting to find out, just to know if they received my story that I sent them at the end of September.
Yeah.
Well, I know that I send out at my job, I send out a lot of time sensitive or seat sensitive information. And I know that there's in Microsoft Outlook, there's a follow-up option where you can have it request a received receipt and a read receipt. And you will get, as the recipient of said email, you will get a notification that says so-and-so wants a read receipt. Do you want to send the response now?
But every
time
you
there's also functions that every time you open that email, that pops up again.
So, but a lot of people don't use that.
I know. I use it fairly often at work, but like I said, you know, I work for a company that's sensitive on that.
As Roland has said, I've got experiences now with two different publishers where they switched ownership and my story was lost in the mix. And it's not until the table of contents comes out that it's like, oh,
jerks.
Have you sent out acceptance rejection letters? Well, yeah, I haven't gotten any and I submitted.
Yeah.
And in some cases, I had the email from them going, your story was, has been received. It's just in that transition from one company to another, it got lost in the shuffle.
I've only lost one submission so far.
It was the night that you're about to send out
accepted
rejected letters, and you're going through email going, oh, crap.
Yeah. I will probably lose more. I mean, it happens sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. If you haven't received the confirmation that your story's been received,
it's unnerving,
and that it's going to be read, then you should probably ask them if you haven't heard back from them in like a month, or
I would argue don't even wait
the month. If you send it in and you don't get anything for a week, send them just to make sure that they got it, because a week after the deadline, they're already working to make their anthology. Like, they're already reading submissions. They're already considering, you know, who to accept and who to reject. And it doesn't help to wait.
Mm.
That's exactly what you're going to do. You're going to be waiting. Just get that confirmation that you know that it's in there. And then just forget about it.
Yep. So you've received your confirmation, and your stories.
We talked about this on our publishing episode.
Yeah.
On our ship at Fuck It, is that, you know, just forget about it. Just realize it's there, but put it in the back of your mind, because sitting there waiting to hear that letter is just going to annoy you and eat you up from inside.
Yeah.
And generally, the longer the work, the longer you're going to have to be waiting. It is normal for a novel to take upwards to a year, if not more, for an editor to publish.
That's a year would be pretty quick.
Yeah.
Lately, I've heard a lot of people going, oh, I'm waiting to hear back from Trick or Treat, too. And just like, yeah, didn't you just submit that last month?
Yeah,
like, it's only been a month. Like, I understand he wants it out. He probably wants to push it out for Halloween.
People need to consider how many submissions they've received. How many they need to read all of them.
I quickly go back to the example of, well, with Pulp, we submitted in May, I think. It didn't hear out until December.
Yeah.
And then there's the one anthology that we're still waiting to hear just if they got our anthologies. And then you guys are still waiting on that one anthology that's been, 2 years now?
Yeah.
The transforming?
Oh, the one that's not happening.
At this point, is it really happening?
The transformation's one.
Well, yeah. The anthology that just... submissions have been received, but, I mean, I haven't gotten any confirmation or anything. Yeah. Any responses have been indecisive.
And for Roar, how long were you guys waiting for Roar?
2+.
Yes, it's been a while.
But that also has to do with the shifting of company over, which is why Fang, my story got lost.
It also had to do with personal issues with the editor.
Yeah, he did send out an email.
We knew why.
Yeah.
Which is the important thing.
Well, once I received the notification, you know, these have been received, I'm working on it, this is the issue at the moment, please give me time. I was fine with it.
Secret that Punk'd has been severely delayed because I'm unemployed. I have a lot more things to worry about than an anthology at the moment.
And this goes back to the editors and writers. As an editor talking to your writers, make sure you keep them in the loop. It's really, and I'm saying this from my experience with Abandoned Places, it's really easy to forget that you have a bunch of people waiting on you to find out what's going on with their babies. And if you don't tell them, they get really anxious. And, you know, and it's even worse if you have a separate email account set up for them, because if you don't check it, like I check mine maybe once a month. And someone could have sent me an email at the beginning of the month, and I'll get to it next month. Well, that to me makes me feel bad, because I should be at least keeping
them.
Yeah. And occasionally, like, people will send you an email, and you'll be like, I'll respond to this later, and completely forget, and it gets buried.
Well, I've done it where I'm at work, checked Twitter or sent an email, and they've like, oh, I want to info on this, and it's like, okay, well, I'll check that when I get home. And then 3 weeks later, it's like, oh, you know, it's completely left my mind. It's like, oh, crap, I need to double check this.
Yeah, I do that at work all the time. I have I have three emails at work that I have to monitor for the company. And someone will request something, and it's I have other time-sensitive stuff to do it. And next thing you know, it's at the end of the day, and it's like, crap. And I've got the other email for the writing account. And Lord knows, poor Rachan had to put up with me going, Space Cadet, oh yeah, I have another email I have to check for my writing account.
But, you know, once it's submitted, you get that confirmation, you're going to be waiting.
Yeah.
Just forget it.
It's
after maybe, I don't know, 3 months, I want to say a rule of like 3 months. If you haven't heard anything, maybe ping them.
3 months, even like 6 months.
I'd at least ask for an update, see if things are going well.
The acceptance and rejection probably shouldn't take more than about 3 months.
Like, there's no real rule of thumb.
No, there isn't. You have to read the stories. You have to
judge the stories.
You have to
balance the stories.
Like, it's fairly intimidating to decide which stories you think are like objectively better.
Mm-hmm.
Than other stories.
Sometimes there's a really good story, but it doesn't fit the anthology.
It's a hard decision to make.
Like, one of my friends, his pulp story, he sent in a story for pulp, and they were like, this is a good story, but we don't feel it fits with the rest of the stories. And you've had that.
Yeah.
It happens.
And then that's just to read the stories. Yeah. Don't get me started on editing them.
Yeah, so...
That takes longer.
Like, if you have been accepted, I don't know what... As you two guys being editors of anthology, like what do you think is appropriate for someone to just kind of ping? How's the edits coming? Is there any update?
Well, I think
don't spam them every week, but I think any time is appropriate.
Is once a month acceptable?
Once a month is okay. I would be okay with it. It's just unless the editor comes back and says, I've hit a slow spot, you know, let me. And I mean, as this comes to the opening communication from the editor going, I'm seeing this, maybe get, you know, if you don't hear from me in the next, say, 2 months, 3 months, let me know, and I'll get back to you then. But
ideally...
If they don't say that, then that's the point where, yeah, you know.
Ideally, the editor should be diligent enough to let the submitters know.
They should be communicating.
What's going on. They should be communicating what's going on. Because if people don't like waiting...
No.
And if you're making them wait, there are certain like degrees of time which you can sort of let things sit. So 3 months for the reading, acceptance, rejection, then 3 months for the editing. And even if you're not done, just email your writers and let them know where you're at.
Yeah.
I mean, the main thing to take into consideration with all of these points is that you are dealing with another human being who has a life of their own.
And writing is never a fast process.
No. Yeah, exactly.
There's no part of this process from start to finish that is fast.
No.
It's the tortoise in the hare race.
It's a game
like,
of patience.
Slow and steady will make sure that your story gets presented in the best light possible.
But this loops back to what we're saying. Communication helps everything.
Both ways.
If people know why something's taking for so long, they're going to be a little more lenient. Like, we're still waiting on stories. We'd love to know what's going on. We have no knowledge. And it's almost disrespectful. It's like we put our heart and time into writing these and sending them off. And we can't even hear if you even received them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I did with Abandoned Places is if one person would ask me where everything sat, I sent out a general email to everyone saying, this is where we're at, this is where we're done, and this is what's changed since the last time I've emailed you, and this is where I'm looking to go in the next, you know, blank amount of time.
And sometimes it's not even the editor you're waiting on. The editor's waiting on the publisher or one other author.
I'm waiting on For Planet.
Like, this is the same if you say you want to approach a publisher with a novel, or, you know, maybe you've got an anthology idea. Publishers are busy. Sometimes you have to sit and wait.
Like, this hardly bears repeating, but almost everybody in the furry fandom as a writer has a full-time job. Yeah. So it's going to take time.
Full-time job, families,
so
friends,
lives. Be diligent, be persistent, don't nag.
Nobody likes a nag.
You've got to remember, especially in the case of the publishers, they've got their normal job, they've got their publishing job, and they've got cons that they have to go to make money through their publishing.
Mm-hmm.
That's three things that they've got to do regularly that take up a ton of time. I couldn't even begin to think the process that it would take to go to a con, like, say, AC, and run a booth for the entirety of the con.
And sometimes they're even helping sell for other publishers.
Long story short, you know, 3 months, send an email, don't send them weekly. Maintain consistent.
It's a rule of thumb. Just don't be annoying, but at the same time, know that it is your right to find out what's going on.
Maintain a consistent line of communication, but do not abuse it.
If you're not getting a response from the editor, you have all the rights to edit the or to email the publisher as well.
That as well.
You know,
the publisher is there to make sure that the editors of any book or anthology get it done.
And going back to having a network, sometimes you don't hear from either of them, but you know somebody who is a friend with the editor, and you know they'll be like, oh, well, they're currently working, they're stuck on this. They haven't told anybody, but this is what it is. Or, like, I've helped other people, like, I just want this question about an anthology, and so let me ask the editor for you. It's not something I'm normally going to do.
Yeah.
I'd still encourage you to try to talk to them directly, but...
If you ever reach the point where you feel like you've been waiting too long, you're not getting enough responses, or the whatever excuses or reasons the publisher or editor has to come up with, just send them an email saying, well, thank you for your time. I would like to revoke my story and be done with it.
Especially if you have another place that the story could easily go.
Be civil, be reasonable. You know, don't expect your story to be, you know, written, edited, and published within a span of 6 months. That is never going to happen.
And don't expect the editor, if you email them that, don't expect them to, you know, scrabble and try and keep you. Don't do this as a last-ditch jealousy effort type of nonsense.
I would hope someone wouldn't do that.
You know what? Worst case scenario.
Actually, that reminds me of the whole thing you were just saying with my fairy tale story. I submitted it, and they were like, okay, it's accepted, and then wait. And while I'm waiting, I'm seeing anthology after anthology after anthology on the same topic go through. And then after they go all the way through, and then it's this barren landscape for anthologies for it, the guy goes... Yeah, I don't have time for this anthology, so I'm dropping it.
Ugh.
And it's just like, it's like anything. It's a gambling game. If he had kept in communication with me, or had I ended up emailing him about it, then maybe I could have taken my story somewhere else and had a home for it. As it is now, I have this unique story that doesn't fit anywhere.
You have a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of the issue about writing for anthologies. They're all very specific. Mm-hmm. Unless it is like a generic cyberpunk story or something similar, like a, you know, a pulp anthology. Those can fit a lot of places.
Pretty broad spectrum.
But, you know, if you're writing Dread Time stories,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless it's like a Grimm Tales anthology, it's not going to fit anywhere else.
Children's nightmares.
Well, it's like I was lucky enough with my steampunk horror story that when the one company lost the story, I Googled and found another one that opened up.
Have you thought to Google for your Dread Time or Children's Nightmares? Or that sucks.
Yeah.
No, like, I'm still wondering what to do with my flash fiction.
I'm still sitting on tiny hooves and solar wings.
Yeah. We're all waiting.
At least we're communicating.
Exactly.
We're sitting on a little.
So waiting in communication. Please take those
scenario
back to
post
heart.
Your old stories to FA.
No.
That's what I'm debating.
If it doesn't fit anywhere, then why not? Otherwise, you're just going to sit on your hard drive and do nothing.
One of my stories that I've submitted and is in no man's land, I realized could fit another anthology. And I emailed the editor going, would this fit? And they're like, possibly. So. That's an option, you know, because I believe this one anthology will definitely see print, but this other one, I'm starting to waver about its fate, you know.
Yep.
But them's the breaks, right?
Beaten this horse sufficiently.
Yep.
Yep.
Yay, dead horses.
Why do you guys always kill the horse?
Well, none of us are horses here, so it's kind of funny.
I think it's because it's the caffeine's wearing off and we're slowly slowing down.
Well, that and we're really not talking about communication for a lot of this. So
actually, a lot of it is still communicating, though.
Yeah.
Tangents of communication.
This is why communication is important.
There's a lot to be said for communication as a writer, because besides the actual beginning craft of itself, everything else is about communication and interaction with other people. And you can't escape it. No. Even back in the day when you had agents and submissions, you still had to communicate with people.
And communication is a two-way street, sadly.
Yeah.
You can communicate all you want to one person, but if they're not going to communicate back, there's not much you can do there, sadly. But the best you can do is making sure that you're communicating.
Yeah. And your doors are always open.
Okay, we've said communication enough now. So, we're lazy this week. We'll do mail next week.
Sorry.
It's Sunday. We want to go back to our day. Thank you guys for listening. Please email us any suggestions you have, topics you want to hear, guests you'd like on. So, email us at podcast@fangsandfonts.com. Find us on Twitter @fangsandfonts. We're on Facebook. Fur Affinity.
Wikipedia. Weasel.
We're on Wikipedia?
No,
what?
We're not fur.
That'd be amazing if we were on Wikipedia.
I don't know. We'll look into that. It's not like we can't add it. Sorry, Wiki Fur.
I don't want to add us to Wikipedia.
What's that? Communicate with us?
Communicate with us about anything you'd like about the show. Suggestions, complaints, comments, anything else.
Topics. We like topics.
You know, we should probably do some topics people have suggested.
Yeah, that's true.
I would love to.
Otherwise, if you like us, tell a friend. And we'll get you guys next time. Thank you.
Bye. Yay.
Bark.
Spider noises.
Rawr. Doop. Rawr, 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 rawr.
Rawr, 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 rawr.
This has been brought to you by
your music hall.
The sound of Fangs and Faults. Rawr, rawr, rawr. Spider noises, Duke, and meow.
I could cheetah bark.
Aww.